Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, world, and good evening. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge with the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show. It is scan number 2718, and we are wanting to welcome you here tonight. I want to welcome you, and so does my co-host Penelope, who is with us. This is special guest night. We have them on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and today is Wednesday. So we have a very special guest that will be sharing her story, and we thank her so much for coming on and being brave enough and compassionate enough to share with those of you out there who are going through similar or have been through childhood trauma. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is give it a phone number, 646-595-2118, to call in and be a panelist and interact with our guest. 646-595-2118. If you want to come on the panel and listen only, that's perfectly fine. Okay, so I'm going to ask Penelope, my co-host, to tell you about NASCA and about its mission.
Thank you, Pamela. And am I coming through clearly right now?
You are.
Okay, just want to double check. So we didn't have a review to Monday night. I've been having some phone issues. Don't you love technology? But thank you for the opportunity, Pamela, to talk to you about NASCA. As you know, NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And at NASCA, we're all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first goal being educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pan-worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, we offer hope and healing through numerous paths, such as this show, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So as co-host, I am also responsible for welcoming in anyone who wishes to join the panel. I will welcome in on the back line. I have someone I need to – oh, I don't need to welcome him in. He is here, John from Louisiana. So we have a growing panel. But if you wish to call in to be a member of our panel, as Pamela stated earlier, the number to do that is 646-595-2118. So thank you, Pamela, for the opportunity to talk about NASCA's mission.
Thank you, Penelope. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started with our special guest. Shannon McGraw-Carr is from Kingwood, Texas. Many people probably know where that's at. She was raped several times by her grandfather on her mother's side. It was generational rape because her mother was also raped from the age of 2 to 10, and Shannon's older sister. So I'm not going to go any further. This is Shannon's story, and we want to hear it from the chronological era and talk about her family of origin first, and then when the rape began, at what ages. So please, Shannon, to the show. Shannon?
Hi, thank you so much. Yes.
Welcome, Shannon.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome, Shannon.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm glad to be here and to be able to share.
Have you shared on any other places before like this kind of a platform?
I actually have. I've been speaking and trying to have my own voice and then help other people have their voice for probably the past 15 years for sure. I will tell you though that this particular focusing on the aspect of my grandfather is something newer for me, just because my memories, I was so young that I don't have complete memory, and the memory didn't come back. I mean, the aspects of everything really didn't come to full fruition for me until I was in my late 30s. So I'll be honest, you know, and as many people are listening that may have gone through this, it might be that when something has happened to you at such a young age or in such a close proximity within your own family and you had known that person in a different way, you know, it's just that much more sensitive to talk about. So this is probably the first time I've just focused on that aspect of what I've been through. So, yeah.
Okay. So without further ado, we're going to go on and have you speak about your family of origin and what went on with your grandfather.
Sure. So just as I mentioned, you know, this is kind of new for me to even talk about this. And I think, you know, I find it almost, very interesting to find myself in this place and feeling what I'm feeling. Still feeling that sense of protection, you know, that need wanting to protect the family, protect everybody involved, aunts, uncles, cousins, siblings, mother. and anyway, I grew up in a very, you know, loving family. You know, I will, and I don't think that my mom would mind me saying this, I will say that my mom, who was very caring, very nurturing, very giving, but she did hold back a lot in her affection. And now, oh my gosh, hold on. I'm getting a, I got a, what do you call it, an Amber Alert. I don't know if everybody gets those across the United States, but I got one here in Texas. My mother, we didn't know about what had happened with her and her father. And so growing up, this is kind of how this unfolded for me. My grandfather, my mom's father, and her mother would come and visit us at least once or twice a year, and then we would go and have family reunions in Colorado. We would go camping, or we would go visit them in Albuquerque. And, you know, until my memories came back, I remember my grandfather being funny. He's good-looking. He's, you know, I enjoyed him. I truly thought that he was just hilarious. My grandmother, I didn't care very much for, I'll be honest. She was always in a bad mood, always angry. Her mother and, I mean, herself and my mom were always fighting. They were always just having words, and I would walk into conversations that would be very heated, and I never really understood what was going on. And so that's kind of my thought or memory behind my early memories, I guess, if you will, of that. that aspect of our family. Within my own nucleus of the family, you know, my father loved me very much. He was very affectionate. I knew that my mother loved me. I just know that it was my father that was more, you know, kissing, loving, saying I love you, and my mother was a little more standoffish, if you will. It wasn't until I was in high school, and I was, well, it wasn't until I was in college when everything kind of came to fruition, but when I was in high school, I was raped by a friend that I had known forever, and that was a very difficult thing for me, and I will say, I need to go back a little bit. I will say, yes.
What ages were you when your grandfather was abusing you?
3 to 6. 3 to 6 is
okay.
The age that I can possibly recall. So what I was about to say is if I was to go back and kind of recall that time, I remember being very aware of my body, knowing, you know, masturbation, and I hope I'm able to talk about this because even just saying it kind of bothers me a little bit. But
yes, it's an adult, so go ahead.
Okay, I remember, you know, being very young and always being that little kid that I was constantly wanting to please myself, and that's something I would do to try to be able to go to sleep at night, and getting in trouble for it if I was caught. So that's kind of the memory I have of that. But I will be honest, like I didn't, it wasn't that I remembered, or I can tell you off the bat that for many years, it wasn't that I was afraid of my grandfather or remembered it. And I'm certain that was because I was so young, just so young. So when I was raped in high school and raped in college, when I was raped in college, that was one that I finally came out and did something about it. And I was in such a dark place in my life that I didn't want to live anymore. I was considering suicide. And my mother, I came home from my freshman year of college for the summer. And I was just in such a deep, dark place. And I remember my mother just like spanking me at one time, like so frustrated with me. She didn't know what to do. She like swatted my butt. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm 19 or 20 years old. Like, why would you do that? And she was like, what is wrong with you? You know, you're going to go to therapy. I don't know what else to do with you. And so she forced me into therapy.
I hate to interrupt. But we've got this show
no problem. 90 minutes
long. So if we fail everything.
Well, I did not know that, so I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, we have.
Well, here's the problem. Let me tell you right off the bat. I cannot tell you what happened for me at a young age. I can't until my memories came back later in my stage of life when I was in my 30s. So I guess in my mind, as in telling my story, I just needed to be able to tell you this aspect so that I could explain. Because I think there are so many people that don't have those memories at that time, at that first stage of
family and
life.
But there's some questions that we have that,
sometimes
it even causes our guests to remember things. But what we'd like to know is, you know, how did you handle elementary school, pre-K, you know, those years before you got into high school? Did you have any problems that you can now relate back to, acting out problems, different things like that within those years?
No, ma'am.
Within your development.
To be that way. Elementary school, I had some different things happen that weren't related to this at all. We had moved around, and then we ended up, you know, staying in Sherman. My father, we went from El Paso to Sherman for various reasons, and so in elementary school, I just No, I truly don't. I was a normal child who, I was a good kid. I didn't get in trouble. I didn't have any issues. Honestly, throughout school, dealing with school.
Yeah. Did you have any friends?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I've always had a large group of friends. I've not been one that has, like, only had my one good friend. You know, I do have a very good friend that I've known for the longest. I have a few of them that I still have been friends with over, like, 35, 40 years. But I was one that I was really good with everybody. So I was definitely the one in my family. I mean, it might be my sister that you really want to talk to. She's the one that had more problems growing up. But, no, for me, I think my coping mechanism was to literally put it in a black box and just not remember.
Okay,
not until I was in college and high school.
Okay. Were you ever threatened by your grandfather not to tell? Did he say this is a secret and we don't tell? And I mean, did any of that go on? I mean, you were 6 years old. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a child that has pretty much, you know, pretty cognizant. So did you remember any kind of threats or any kind of, you know, this is a secret, we have to be quiet about it?
No. The only thing I can honestly say and remember is that that he made me feel like I was wanting it. That's all I can say. I don't have the memory of him threatening me, of him doing that. I don't have that memory. The memories that came back when I was in my 30s are what happened, and that's what I went through with EMDR, and those moments and that fear and that, you know, the triggers and his breath smelling like coffee and, you know, all of those things. But the things that he said to me, I apologize, but no, I don't. I just don't have those memories.
No,
they're still in my...
Please do not apologize. We're just trying to see, you know, if there's anything that, because everybody's story is different, you know.
Right.
And we just kind of try to lead you to see if there is anything that stands out. But it sounds like to me you are kind of a different, you know, totally different from a lot of stories that we've heard. You know,
mm-hmm.
that you actually buried this and just totally lost. Do you go to therapy or have you been to therapy?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'm still in therapy.
Did your therapist ever tell you that you disassociated and that's why you didn't remember it, that you totally zoned out?
Absolutely. Yes, that is probably the main aspect that has unfortunately happened and that I still have to watch to this day is that disassociative disorder of so easily being able to check out and be present and people think that I'm there and I will not remember a conversation. I will not remember. And the slightest trigger can send me into that state. Yes.
Then we move on and you were raped in high school. So when
mm-hmm.
you were raped in high school, did that bring up any of the members? Memories from the past with your grandfather, or you still had them blacked out?
No, I still had them blacked out. The memories of my grandfather didn't surface. One slight thing came up when I was in college, and that's why I was going to that point. But
okay, go ahead and go to the college.
Yeah.
Then you were raped in college.
Sorry, I'm just telling you my own chronological aspect. You know. And I think there might be a lot of people like me that might be questioning because of the fact that they can't answer the questions that you're asking me, right? So it makes them question themselves and it makes them think, well, maybe it just didn't happen or maybe I'm making it up or maybe, you know what I'm saying? And I will tell you, I feel defensive. So then they feel defensive and then they don't want to talk about it and then they don't want to, you know what I mean? So I'm just saying that's, that could be the aspect. I know that there are so many variations of what happens with us when we go through this type of event. So happened in college?
The reason I was asking that is because I don't see anywhere in your bio that talks about disassociation. So the reason I was asking the questions is because I wasn't given that information about that. So, you know, that's why I'm thinking.
Because this is my very first time to actually say this in public. Because I will tell you there's a shame behind. Yes, absolutely. I am a public figure. I have spoken all over the world. I have books. And I will tell you that I've never mentioned the fact that I have dealt with this problem, because it still can plague me to this day. And because I will get in situations, if I'm extremely stressed, if I was in a situation in, for instance, my past marriage, where everything was just highly, highly emotional, highly, highly heightened in a stressful way, dealing with so much, I would find myself, you know, facing a friend that was very upset with me because apparently I had said something horribly rude or mean. And I'm like, I have no recollection at all of that conversation. Wow. And that's when I began to realize that this is still an issue that I deal with. And so that's an embarrassing thing. That's a shameful. I'm saying those words because I'm saying that that's the feeling. I know logically, I know intellectually that it's not. Like, I help survivors, and I get that, and I work with so many people that disassociate, and when I meet with another person that can understand it and embrace that with me, it's such a good feeling to know, like, I'm not alone. But, yes, for the first time, this is probably the first time I'm admitting that that is an issue that I've had. Because
Shannon, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your bravery, and I'm sorry if I took you somewhere you didn't want to go. And I told you in the beginning of the show that if you didn't want to answer a question, please don't just say, I don't want to go there.
No, I really don't have a problem answering. I don't. I just, honestly, until you mentioned it that way, I don't think that I've thought about the fact that what I still keep close. I've just never really thought about it.
Well, I want to tell you that we have had several guests that come on and talk about their dissociative problem. So you are not alone, gal. There are many people out there and you can go back in our archives and listen to them because this is a widespread mental health problem for victims of child abuse. Now, do you mind if we go to the panel now? We're already almost 30 minutes into the show. Okay.
Well, sure, absolutely.
Put you on the. Okay, Shannon, you're on with Penelope.
Okay, thank you, Pamela. And oh my gosh, Shannon. First of all, I just want to say, and I feel like I always say this to every special guest that comes on the show, but I say it because I really truly believe this is true. I think to be on the show and be willing to speak your truth, and I know, we're going to get into the last segment of the show, the work that you're doing today, and that you're not a stranger to the work, being published, sharing your story, whether it's writing or working with other people. But I do think that when you come on the show, it is a platform, right, for telling your story. And you're in, obviously, as Pamela mentioned, really good company because we've all, had similar, not the same, but similar experiences. But I think it is brave to come and tell your story on the show. And I think that it's a gift. As Pamela mentioned, we archive the shows because a lot of people go back and listen to these shows, over the years. It helps them in their, wherever they are in their healing journey. So it's a gift that you give yourself, and it's a gift that you give other people. And I think you give a part of yourself when you give that gift. It's painful. You go down there and you're digging deep and stuff comes up. And just like something came up for you, you acknowledged some dissociation. And so that's why I think it's so courageous, because I think it's a gift where there's also part of a sacrifice to make because it's hard. And so I think it's very courageous, and I just want to acknowledge you in that.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you're not alone. I mean, you're not alone when you talk about, you know, dissociation. And I'm not an expert. You know, I'm not a social worker. I'm not a psychologist, but I am a survivor child abuse in all forms, including sexual abuse from my own father. And I, you know, when you say dissociated, and like I said, I'm not an expert in it, and I know there's different, you know, it's a very broad subject, right, and a lot of different, I guess there's a spectrum, if you will. I don't know
a
if that's
spectrum,
the proper
yeah.
verbiage. But, I've dissociated. You're not alone, right? I think it's called desensitization. I split from my body during one very,
mm-hmm.
very, very violent beating, and I literally floated above mm-hmm. and watched the scene. So, you're not alone.
I've had that happen as well. Yeah.
And that is, mm-hmm. it almost seems unreal. And even
mm-hmm.
when you say it, right, it almost seems, you know, like unreal. Like I always say, okay, this really did happen, number one, and I'm wondering how this is laying on someone's ears, number two, right? But
mm-hmm.
I believe it happened to you, and I know it happens to me, and it's I understand. And just I think to know that you're not alone, that someone can understand and align with that, and that's what you get with NASCA, which I think I'm glad, you know, you're here. We definitely can, you know, our experiences might be slightly different, but a lot of times the feelings around sharing our experiences are the same for how,
mm-hmm.
you know, the healing journey. So enough of that. But with that being said, I actually, you know, as I'm listening to your story and I'm hearing grandfather, and it sounds like it was generational, that your mother was also
mm-hmm.
a victim of your grandfather. There's something that just, and here you are, right? Here you are breaking the cycle, you know, and going through the healing journey, or have, you know, I call it going through the healing journey, not because I don't think that you're healed. I just think it's a journey
sure.
to life. That's
it's
why
continuous.
I'm positioning it. Yeah, it that way.
Mm-hmm.
The question I'm having is, like, you know, did your mother,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a mother, right? And I
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm a mother there. So I'm thinking, gosh, did your mother ever have any fear? You know, were there any red flags with your own mother that she might be putting you, or I don't know if you have any siblings, you know, that were also affected by your grandfather,
mm-hmm.
at risk? You know, was that, was your mother aware? Was she
mm-hmm.
concerned? So that's, I'm just thinking about these questions as I'm hearing your story.
And that, again, goes into what I was trying to get into when I was in college and then how it all kind of came out. But just to specifically answer that question, when she then was, my grandmother was confronted with the fact and the knowledge with the fact that, you know, my sister and, you know, was affected. And I never came out with the fact that I was until my full memories came back, because I would not embrace it until I actually knew. Even though it was in the back of my mind, like, I know this happened to me, but I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't embrace it. I couldn't hold on to that. I was dealing with rape. I was dealing with other things besides that. So, but in a conversation with my mother after that of her apologizing, she truly, and I've heard this from so many other people that I've worked with, that she felt like it was just her. You know, my grandfather raped her from 2 to 10, and he only stopped raping her because she had started her period. But we also really found out that my grandfather tended to go towards the younger age. So the minute that we hit a certain age, if there was somebody else in his reach, I guess you were forgotten. And so this is another aspect that I went through in therapy, was the fact that, you know, oh, my gosh, I guess I could have answered. I didn't even think about this until it just now hit me. But I then felt unwanted after it stopped, I guess, without realizing it. Like, that
mm-hmm.
just kind of came up in therapy at some point, was the fact that mm-hmm. I just so desperately needed the attention of a man, because when it stopped, it's like, well, then I'm not lovable, or I'm not worthy, or I'm not good enough, because then if he doesn't want me anymore, then, like, who does, you know? And so I would always want the attention of men constantly. It didn't matter. And anyway, but back to specifically your, I know we can probably go into that more detail in another segment, but my mother felt like it was just her. And I think she just kept it at that. Like, she just thought, okay, I'm only going to let them see them, you know, once a year, twice a year. And she, in her mind, felt like she was not offering, you know, every time we were around them, we were around other people. But if you all know, like, if this is what somebody wants to do, then they find the way to get you alone. And I think she let her guard down. I think after some time you let your guard down and you, maybe you avoid it. I don't, you know, I can't answer for her in that, but I have forgiven my mother for sure. But I think in her own way, she felt like she was thinking that she was keeping us from it, but she wasn't.
Thank you for answering. Thank you for answering my question. I know it's a tough question to answer. Thank you, and thank you, Pamela, for the opportunity to interact with Shannon. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Pamela.
Well, Shannon, we've got two more panelists. John from Louisiana is on. John, you're on with Shannon.
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Good. Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Great. Listen, I want to tell you first who I am so you know where I'm coming from, is that I am the vice president of another organization, which is listed as SCSA, okay? So we survive as a childhood sex abuse, okay? I've been with other organizations such as SNAP, but I can tell you that with the people that you're on here with tonight are probably, to me, the most true people you're ever going to meet when you do this kind of thing, you know. And I can't thank you enough for coming on, because every time that I hear a story, and yours is exquisite because of your memory situation. Yeah, I love where you're coming from, and I feel you. I mean, I got so much empathy for you right now. I'm just overwhelmed because I've been reading. Look, we don't have enough time to go over everything that I want to. I'm telling you right now, we don't. But there's only so much time, and this is your night, you know. So, I wanted to go over a couple of things that I heard you say. You know, I don't want to offend you or say anything wrong. So make sure that you know that I'm with you all the way, okay? And if you don't want to answer anything, you don't have to. But you know, going back, you know, to that high school situation, did you say that you were raped by one of your friends?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That must have been like the worst situation that could ever be. You know, if it's a friend of yours like that, and they took advantage of you, huh?
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
That's what it sounds like. That to me is one of the worst things that somebody could deal with. You know. And the fact that, you know, you came out of that and into college and you came forward, you know. But I want to ask you one thing. What about your grandfather? You said he was hilarious. How was he hilarious? He was just funny and stuff? He just always joking?
Yeah, few memories I have of him, I just remember him being jovial, smiling, good-looking. I enjoyed being around him, from what I recall. I mean, to be honest, that's just what I thought about, yeah.
So you've been through EMDR already?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Have you? Okay, that's great. So I know we're talking about this, and that's a little further down the road, but wow. You know, I can understand where you're coming from now. That just explains a lot. And what I can tell you, though, is that I'm so proud that you came out tonight. You know, how's things in Kingswood these days, okay?
How are things in Kingwood? Well, after flooding Harvey here, they're good.
Oh, no. Yeah, you got it too, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. Yeah, my cousin got nailed too. He's over there. Yeah. But listen, I just want to tell you that there's so many people out here that are listening, and I can't wait for them to hear what you're going to be coming up with shortly, and that's where you're at, you know, because I'm reading so much ahead, and I don't want to go too far ahead, but I always read stuff on people. I've already done my homework, so I, all I can say is I am so proud of you, and I'm so honored to meet you, okay? So if you ever need anything from me, anytime, and I want to say hi to Pamela and Penelope and everybody, because I love all you guys, you know? So I'm gonna leave it at that, and maybe I'll get on later.
Thank you,
on,
John.
Okay?
Thank you so
and you
much.
Have a good night. All right.
We
thank
night.
You.
John, we will definitely be back with you. Okay. Thank you. You've got good insight, John. Okay, we're gonna go to Jessica in West Virginia. Jessica, you're on with Shannon.
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
Hi. Hi, Jessica. Good.
Well, I just wanted to say I am so proud of you for your courage and sharing your story. I know it can't be easy.
Oh, thank you, Jessica.
I only have one question. Did you ever experience maybe a conflict between loving your grandfather and feeling like you should?
Yes. Yes, I did. I can't say that I could have put that into words or when I even recognized that that conflict was something that made sense. But I always knew that there was a difference with those grandparents because I was very close to my dad's parents, very close. My grandfather on my dad's side, I just adored him. And we had such a close bond. And so it was a different feeling. It was a different emotion. And I think I always put that on my grandmother. So for everybody needs to understand that my grandmother knew what my grandfather was doing. And so when I did first start therapy and all of this, it was more of my grandmother that I needed to get over first, if that sounds odd to anybody. But for me, logically, like my grandfather's sick. And then I came to find out that he had had abuse in his past that didn't make it any easier. And later on, I can discuss how I got to forgiveness with him. But my grandmother was harder because she knew with my mother. And, so I never enjoyed my grandmother. And I always thought that any time growing up, it didn't matter what age, that uncomfortableness or that awkwardness or whatever that feeling was, for me, I just associated with my grandmother, not necessarily with my grandfather. And I'll go ahead and say this because to me this is very important, but the one little thing that I said to my mother when she came to help me in college when I was going to go ahead and the guy that raped me in college and I was turning him in and coming out and going through a rape trial. Sorry, excuse me. My mother then confessed that she had been molested when she was a child. She didn't say by who. And I'm the one. I immediately, it just welled up inside me. And I said, it was Grandpa, wasn't it? And that's when I knew, but I was going through, you have to understand, I was going through hell from something else that I had just been through. So, and she goes, why are you saying that? And I just shoved it back into that black, what I call that black box. I just shoved it back in. And I said, I don't know. So, you know, I can't reach that. I can't. That's the best way I can answer that question, I guess.
You did a beautiful job answering that question, and I do relate to you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Okay, Shannon, before we go back to your story, your second segment, I have just one brief question because I missed something in your bio. It said you believe that in some way that your rape related to the fact that you were abused by your grandfather. Can you kind of explain what
yes.
you mean there?
I absolutely know. And all the study that I have now gone through in the 20 years that I've been on my healing journey, that I have been helping thousands of people across the world, that my boundaries were obliterated at the age of 3. I mean, when we're little, it's, oh my gosh, it still brings me to tears to think about it, to think about that little girl. Sometimes in writing my stories and writing my books, like I look back at me as that's not me almost, you know? And I think about that little girl. And when you're learning how to, like, where adults are supposed to show you, like, comfort and safety and support and security and all these very important things, and the boundary of being able to say, no, this is my body, like, you shouldn't do this, and to be respected in that regard. Like, this grandfather who, or grandpa, that's not what I call them, grandpa, you know, he obliterated that boundary. And that boundary alone, that one little boundary, is so important for such a young person. And as I mentioned just earlier, and somebody in, I think, with Penelope, you know, later on, and many, many years later, after I divorced my first husband, I realized this need that I needed, you know, for men to like me. It didn't matter. I mean, a man in the grocery store, if I could just get him to smile at me, it made my day. It sounds so horrible. But I think that he took that sense of that confidence within myself and that ability to say, this is who I am, and you can't treat me this way. You can't talk to me this way. You can't do this to me, you know, all of that. So going into high school, I was searching for that love, that desire, and there's so much more behind that first rape. I had a boyfriend that did treat me with that respect, and he ended up dying in a car accident, so I was very devastated, and I was seeking after that, and just seeking that sense of security and support and whatever else. And you know, I need to mention my father, who is another man in my life. I mean, God bless him. He's now passed, and I do love my father, and I want to respect him. But, you know, he was a functioning alcoholic, so there was that in the family. And there is other abuses in my life. I do need to acknowledge that. And so it was these boundaries that were just not there. They just weren't there. And that's, I'm not blaming myself for what happened in high school or what happened in college, but I also know that it made me more susceptible and vulnerable to that, for that to happen.
Absolutely. The thing is that we, you know, we are supposed to learn how to function in society. And when that happens to us, we lose our identity. We lose how to function with other people. We lose how to, you know, even vet people, you know, dangerous people versus good people, right? I mean, we just lose
right.
so much that, you know, just gets lost in the mix. So, yeah, we hear what you're saying, and, you know, so sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where were we, and where do you want to pick up your story now?
I mean, I'll pick up with, I mean, kind of what I've just kind of was saying and going into when I was in college. You know, when that happened, well, let me go high school. When that happened to me, as I mentioned, you know, I did have a young man that deeply cared about me, but I couldn't even hold on to that normal relationship because it didn't feel right. And I've spoken with so many survivors, thrivers that can relate to this. I'm sure so many of you listening can relate to this, but if it was normal, it didn't feel right. You know, it's like you're almost addicted to that chaos. And I remember breaking up with him, but loving him, enduring him, because he treated me with such respect and dignity, but that was so foreign to me. It was just so foreign, but I was so young, I couldn't put my finger on that at the time. And then he ended up passing away tragically in a car accident. And then I was so angry. I was so angry. And, you know, after that, that's when, you know, I ended up, I just wanted anything. And I just wanted this friend. I wanted him to love me. And it ended up in a very horrible, horrific situation. And so when I went to college, I was still seeking that. I was still seeking that need for that love, that acceptance, somebody to take care of me, not realizing, though, that I wouldn't even be able to truly, fully accept it, in all honesty, because I wasn't there. I just wasn't in that healing moment yet. And I'm so sorry. I have a little tickle in my throat, so please apologize. Anyway.
Of Okay.
So if you want to get a drink of water, if you need to get a drink of water.
Yeah, we can take a second.
Yeah, take a second.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. No.
I'm just getting so – I get so passionate when I talk about all of this, and I think it just gets me. But in college, I was in a sorority, and the gentleman – I shouldn't say gentleman, but I'm going to respect everybody, I guess. But the man that raped me was also in a fraternity, and it was just one of those very cliche situations, if you will. And, you know, it was a first date rape, and then I even went back to the guy for many reasons. I write about all this, and for whatever reason, after my mother, you know, forcing me into therapy and then going to therapy and finally confessing the fact that I had been raped in high school and raped in college, again, I did not speak about my grandfather because it was not open. That box was not open. And I, when my mother came to the college with me, and as I mentioned earlier, but this is such a pinnacle moment for me, I'll never forget this moment of when she decides to tell me we're in my dark dorm room trying to go to sleep, and she tells me that she had been molested as a child, and I just knew. I said, it was Grandpa, wasn't it? And I remember specifically the moment of saying it and pushing it back. And going from that moment forward, that prompted, and I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of my sister, too. Oh, my gosh, it brings me to tears. That prompted my mom to finally talk about what had happened to her publicly. And our family was a very well-known family in our town. And she ended up getting the therapy she finally needed. She had not been in therapy, and she finally went through all this therapy. And then she started CASA in Grayson County. She was one of the founding members 28 years ago. And she did so much. She did so much to help so many kids. She was their longest volunteer. She volunteered for 20 years helping kids to come out of horrible situations.
That is awesome.
Oh, my.
So I just need everybody to. Yes.
So what I was going to say is let's kind of go down further on your bio here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you lived as a victim for many years until you were 27. And then you said you had an epiphany. You had an epiphany or a conversion moment. You had been so angry at the world, at yourself.
I'm a very, very, very faith-driven person. But for those years from 16, you know, 2 weeks before my 17th birthday when I was raped in high school till 27, so almost 10 years, like, I was very angry at God. I was very angry at the world. My first husband and I were married. I met him during the rape trial when I was 19, and God bless him, and I don't want to, he's the father of my two kids, so I don't ever want to really say anything bad, but I think I just went into the safest thing at the time, and he's a good guy. It just wasn't right for me, really. But I just was angry. I was angry. I was filled with so much anger, and I was taking it out on my children that were babies. And there was this moment where my 2.5-year-old, my oldest son, had pooped everywhere. You know, I think we've all probably been through that if we've had toddlers. And my second son was only a month old, and I was by myself, and he had literally taken that and painted all over the bathroom, and it was just a horrible mess. And I went to shove the soiled underwear that was in the corner in his face like he was a dog. And in that moment, I literally felt something stop me and him looking at me, and I thought to myself, who am I? I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be filled with this anger and this, like, I had no idea what the heck was happening. And I just remember, for me, I was saying, just Jesus, help me. Jesus, help me. And I ended up, you know, cleaning my kids up and putting them to bed. And going back in that bathroom and just seeing this mess of crap and just thinking, like, this is my life and I don't want to live this life anymore. And then going into my bedroom and laying face down flat on my nasty carpet. We were very poor at the time. And just laying there and just crying out and just saying, God, you know, I don't want to live this life anymore. So if you really do have something for my life, then take it and do something with it. And in that moment, I felt God. I felt him. I knew him. I smell him, taste him, like I just knew him. And that was the beginning of a change in my life. That was almost 21 years ago. And that's when I...
Awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's when
that
I was called
so
to just
awesome.
Start talking about it and helping others. So,
can we go to the panel now?
Absolutely.
What do you have to say or, you know, support or comment with Shannon right at this moment?
I do. I have a comment, and that is just, you know, wow. I, you know, it just takes so much humility to tell the story of really your lowest moment, right, or one of your lowest moments, a low moment, and one that you're not particularly proud of. Especially, I think, when we're parents and we've experienced pain, we don't ever want to replicate that pain onto our children. And I think it's a very hard thing to acknowledge that whether we were aware or not that we did, right? I think it takes a lot of courage and humility to share what you just shared. But I think that was so beautiful in that moment that you really had, I think, an epiphany. I mean, it's just one of those life-changing moments when God
mm-hmm.
speaks to you. Right, and you were out there, and you're listening. I think God speaks to us a lot, but we have to be listening to hear him. And how that was a changing point. And I, you know, that's thank you.
Penelope, you're breaking up. Are you, Penelope? You're breaking
thanks,
up. Are you
thanks,
moving around? Or?
No, thanks for letting me know. I think it's just the nature of the time. It's more people on their cell phones right now where I live. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I better make it short. Yeah, I think it has to do with something about the volume calls going on right now. So my apologies. But I said thank you because I think, Shannon, I just want to, I think that's just to, I think sometimes when we acknowledge our lowest point, it opens us up
mm-hmm.
for the healing journey. And I really, with your just total just humility and sharing that, with us, people get to that point. You know, it's giving us permission to say,
okay.
You know,
we're not able to comprehend, Penelope. We're not able to comprehend because it's very
sorry.
Choppy.
Okay, sorry. Thank you, Shannon.
Okay.
No,
no
thank
problem.
You, Penelope. I did catch it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Penelope. John, you're on with Shannon.
Hey, Shannon. How you doing, babe? We're back on.
I'm good.
Good. Awesome. Listen, we got about 35 minutes left, and I don't
mm-hmm.
want to take it all up, okay? But I can easily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really just in shock about the trauma that you experienced. And where you are now, you know, it's so educational, you know, to learn about how you went through that and where you are, you know. And that's
mm-hmm.
the biggest part about a lot of this is that people out here need to know exactly
mm-hmm.
how you did it and what was right for you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those, too. You know, I was laying on that carpet with no furniture, crying, starving, you know, asking what happened to my life, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't deserve what happened to our lives as children. None of us did. But to live through this, we have to take a different route in life, you know, because
mm-hmm.
we are not in that social realm where people accept us for what happened to us. Nobody understands
mm-hmm.
exactly what happened to us. and you. I could see it. I could feel it. And I'm telling you, I am so proud of you, Mom. I'm in tears right now over that.
Mm.
I'm telling you what right now, you know. And I hope your family's listening. I hope that they know that they have to support you for where you are today is incredible. And I'm going to leave that into you, you know, because you got a lot of time left on here. But, you know, I want to tell you that I was also, Rachel, when I was 10, okay? I was actually nine. But I actually had him in court when I was 10. And and I had witnesses, and I had many, many, many witnesses against the Archdiocese, okay? I mean, physical eyes laid upon what was happening to me, and he was still acquitted. Now, I want to tell you what happened after, I'll leave it at that. He wound up getting 25 other children after me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so everything that happens, you know, we have to know how you have come out of your, you know, trauma, because we've all been through the trauma of our own instances. You know, there's different levels of it, and there's different things that people do. But I'm really so proud, you know, of your family, your mom doing that. That's incredible. And I do want to say, too, also, you know, I know you talked a lot about relationships, you know. And I think people out here that are listening have to understand one thing about the relationships that we went through and where we are today are two different worlds, okay?
Right.
That,
right.
You know, first of all, you know, our trust was violated, okay, when we were young. And we had what I call murdered souls, okay?
Yeah.
When we were young. We were dead inside already, you know. So whenever we get to this level of coming out of it, it's so intense about the ways that we do it, you know. And I know how you did it, and I know you got to go on and tell your story about that. But I want to tell you that I'm so proud of you for where you are, and I really appreciate your story tonight because it means a lot to me, it personally, you know, because I could vision a lot of your trauma in my own, okay, and I'm one of those where it took what you did in your life. That's what I'm doing in my life right now, okay? That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you know why that's where I'm at. And that's what it takes to be where we're at, you know? So it's a lot of hard work, isn't it, you know?
It is.
it really is. But hey, you know what, though? Sometimes, you know, I get so much joy, though, out of helping people at the end, you know? And I know you do, too. I know that's one of your goals with everything, and I really love you for that. I really do. And keep it up, too, by the way. And I'm going to follow you. You know, I know that you got some stuff you're writing. We'll get to that in a little bit. And and any time, you know, that I can ever do anything for you. We have a women's, you know, and a men's side to our support divisions, you know, with FDSA. So I want you to know that we're working together right now. You know, but I love NASCA, you know, to death. I am a co-founder of SESA, so I have the right to say, hey, you know, I want to work with NASCA because of people just like you. You know, this is why I want to be here. I want to be here because of Pamela. I want to be here because of Penelope, and everybody, you know, that started this, you know, from the beginning, you know, and. Of course, you know, Bill too, you know, for allowing us to be here tonight. So I want to thank you so much, and I can't wait to hear the end of what we're going to go through here in a few minutes. And I love you for what you did. I love you for what you did.
Thank
okay?
you.
Okay, I'll go. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
All
thank
right.
you, John.
Good night.
Jessica, you're on. Jessica from West Virginia.
Hello. I was just wondering,
hi, Jessica.
How did you cope with the rage?
How did I cope with the rage? Is that what your question was?
The anger and the rage that developed after your traumatization?
Right. I you know, that's an interesting question because I can't say that I did. I know that I lashed out a lot, and I know that my first husband and I were very volatile towards each other. You know, he has his own stuff, and I think that, it's like I just needed to fight with somebody. I needed to yell. I needed to lash out. I can't say up until that moment that I had, that I just spoke about when I was 27, that whole 10 years, I was ready to fight. Like, if you brought it on, man, I was going to go after you. You know, I was not who I am today by any means at all. I wouldn't fight a beetle. But, you know, it was after that moment that the way I coped truly was therapy. You know, it's funny when I'll go into this next session, but when I started my nonprofit, Hopeful Heart, I thought, oh my gosh, we need to have like a padded room so that people could go in there and just take things and like just beat everything up and just get it all out, because there were moments that I just needed to do that. I just needed to get it out. And I think we all deal with that in various ways. And some of mine were self-destructive. I know I've worked with other survivors that actually physically harmed themselves. I thankfully was not ever drawn to that. I'm probably too much of a wimp to be drawn to that. But I know that that's definitely something that people end up doing. But for me, I mean, I lashed out with my words. I lashed out physically if I could. But how I coped with it was obviously through therapy and my faith. And growing in my faith life.
So does it still present problems for you today?
That rage?
Yeah.
I can honestly say that now that I'm in the place that I am, I was just thinking about this the other day, like, I am so blessed, and I have no, I won't even feel ashamed or embarrassed to admit that I feel like I finally after I'll be 48 at the very end of this month, that I can say I am so happy and that I love myself. And this might sound weird to other people, but I'm grateful for every aspect of my life because it's created who I am, and that I am resilient and I am courageous, and that I know I've lost everything in Hurricane Harvey. In the midst of that Hurricane Harvey, I was going through thyroid cancer that metastasized, and I was going through radiation, and I was in a marriage that was ending. And I mean, there was all this stuff just right at the end that was like thrown at me. And all I kept thinking was, I have survived, in my opinion, even worse, which is the abuse. And if I can survive that, I can survive and thrive from anything. And now I'm at a point where I am so truly internally and outwardly happy and blessed, and I just don't feel that rage anymore. I just don't. And I have found that forgiveness, and I'm sure we'll talk into this next segment into that. Forgiveness for, I mean, I'll explain what that means because I know that word probably triggers some people, but yeah, I have come to a place finally that I feel good. But I will tell you, I still am in therapy. I still go back to therapy. I don't go every year, but I mean, I am in it right now because I'm in a new marriage, and I just want to make sure that this happiness is sustainable, right? And that I'm not messing it up in some way or whatever, but.
Okay, we're going to get to that. Thank you, Jessica, for your question and comment and your support. Okay, Shannon, before we get into this last segment, I have one question. Uh-huh. You said that you are a world traveler. Just briefly tell me where you've been. Just go down the list real quick. Where you been?
John will understand this. I spoke at World Youth Day with the Pope in Sydney, Australia, and I spoke at World Youth Day in Madrid, and I've traveled all over the world, but those are the two places that I've actually spoken. that were outside of the United States. But then I was on a national speaking team as well for youth.
Oh, awesome. And this was all about sexual abuse, right? Child sex
yes.
abuse.
Well, not just sexual abuse. It was overcoming trauma and, you know, finding that aspect of healing in our lives.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a mental health peer specialist, and what is that? Briefly,
so
what is
Texas,
a mental health peer
Sure. Texas has a certification, which I think is a beautiful thing. I don't know if it's certified everywhere, but so I'm not a licensed therapist. I am a certified peer specialist, meaning I can help people and share my story and relate and help them. And my whole goal in that is to help them on their healing journey, to join alongside them, to be that advocate, and to hopefully gear them into therapy or even discuss the different aspects of like EMDR and the other, you know, healing therapies that are out there. So that's what a peer specialist is. It's somebody that knows, may not have your specific story, but knows your journey.
Well, is it kind of like a coach, a life coach, a mental health life coach? Would you say that it's like that?
Absolutely, 100%, but specific to those that have been through what we've been through.
Yeah, mental health, trauma, peer,
mm-hmm.
childhood trauma, peer, specialist. That's a mouthful.
Right.
Okay, so now okay. we're going to talk about your website just a little bit because I want to get to your book. But Hopeful Heart Ministries, when did it start? What have you been doing with that?
Sure. So Hopeful Hearts Ministry, I started that. I left youth ministry quickly. When I came off that floor, I felt God call me into youth ministry. And I was brought up Catholic, and I had been a part of other religions and Christian denominations. And I felt him call me back into the Catholic Church. And I did question that in the beginning just because there were so many rules and just kind of how I felt about it. But I felt very strongly that he called me back in, and I was like, okay, well, then I want to help change aspects of it. I, at the time, had no idea what that meant. And so I started doing youth ministry, and that's when the more I was speaking with youth, more adults were hearing my story, and that's how I ended up speaking to larger groups and then speaking with this National Catholic Youth Conference and then invited to speak at World Youth Days. And it was at one of the World Youth Days that the scandal happened in the Catholic Church in Boston, and it really hit me how there was just nothing out there for those that had been through this type of abuse, but all type of abuses as well in their past, you know, those that happened as a child, but yet they don't think about it or remember it or want to recall it till they're adults. And then you hear, because I know I heard people say, just get over it or whatever, and it just, God, that was, excuse me, but that would just piss me off. And I just wanted to do something about that. And so I ended up leaving youth ministry and starting Hopeful Hearts January 24th of 2012. So it'll be 10 years this coming up January. And my whole point was to give a voice to survivors of abuse and to provide that one-to-one peer support to give somebody just that ability who may be afraid of therapy. There's so many people my age, ages older. I mean, I will tell you the median age of somebody I've worked with is, you know, in their mid-50s. I've worked with a woman that was 84 that never spoke about the abuse by her stepfather just because of the fact of, you know, a lot of people tend to think that I work with those that are, you know, underprivileged or low income. And I do work with that group as well. But I will tell you the majority of those that I work with are from that they were brought up in well-to-do homes. You know, these are doctors, lawyers, business people that never felt that they could talk about what happened in their past because of that shame. But we hit our 30s, 40s, 50s, and we recognize how it affects our families, how it affects our children, how it affects our businesses, you know, how it affects our job situation. And so they finally want to get that help. And so that's what we do with Hopeful Hearts is just to have that safe place to fall, that security to come.
So having it been around for 9 years, NASCA's been around for 11 years, probably going on 12, but having Hopeful Hearts Ministry around 9 years, have y'all grown to a very large, large portion of population? Large population?
I feel like we do. I mean, we have definitely a large Facebook following. You can go to Hopeful Hearts Ministry on Facebook, and we have different videos, and we've done different programs. I've done some Facebook Lives. I might even start my own podcast. I'm in the process of doing a podcast with one of my survivors, Jenna. She was also raped by her grandfather, and she's just in her late 20s right now. But I did these videos. They're called I Have a Voice videos. You can search them on YouTube. I have a YouTube page, Shannon McGraw. I have tons of videos on that page of me speaking and the I Have a Voice videos that we've done. But now I also work with a woman. She's a pediatrician, but she specializes in trauma therapy, and she herself is a survivor of sexual abuse within the Catholic Church, and she still is Catholic, but she works with Hopeful Hearts, and she's in the Tacoma, Washington area, and she just does amazing things. And so, we have people all over the United States that do what I do and help. And I will say, before COVID, we were really taking off and about to grow. There's so much that I feel like that we could do. And then COVID happened, and I lost all our funding. And so I did everything I could to kind of keep it going. And of course, I was helping more people during COVID. And so I had to get another job, which I love and adore also. I'm a publisher of a Catholic magazine in my area, two of them actually. But it's now allowed me to hire somebody else. I've hired another survivor that she's coming on as a development director. And to me, it's always been God's ministry. So it will grow. I know it will. And I'm very thankful for it.
So do you have funders or grants or something like that? Quickly, just answer that quickly.
No, I mean, I do have, monthly donors, and that's what keeps us going and alive. And I do have those, before COVID happened, our biggest thing, we'd have this one big gala, and that's how we would get our budget for the year. But so now we'll have a 10-year anniversary, and we'll see what happens. But I haven't gotten a lot of grants. A lot of people don't understand the need. I will tell you, it's unfortunate. A lot of people don't understand the need for that continued healing and that continued education. And they want to say, well, I don't understand. They're adults. Like, why do they need something? Or they have money. And I don't charge anybody anything. So other people, I just won't charge people. So anyway.
Well, you should go to the donors whose children have been abused, and you'll find one there.
Right.
When the legislature people get their kids then there's a law all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
One question, and this is kind of a toughie, and if you don't want to answer it, you don't have to, but how do you validate what's going on with the Catholic Church and the priests and all the sexual abuse going on, and still have respect for the Catholic Church? How do you bridge that gap? Because
To me, that's not a hard question, because to me, those are people. They're people that are fallible. They have done horrible atrocities, and it's horrible, no doubt. To me, the actual Catholic Church, the actual Catholic faith is Jesus Christ. In the beginning, it's the Eucharist. It's what I receive from receiving the Eucharist. It's what I receive from receiving my, my reconciliation, from receiving my sacraments, from being able to give that over. I have received life-changing, life-giving moments and with the Holy Spirit and within the Catholic faith, and I just can't and won't give it up. I have tried. I have been angry, I have gone and been like, I just can't do this. And then I go into another Christian denomination who I love and respect all. And so it's nothing against them. It's just that I am Catholic, and it's hard to walk into a certain, you know, a church that doesn't have the presence for me, if you're not Catholic, then you don't understand what I'm saying, and that's okay. But there's, for me, I just feel like I know when that Eucharist is there and it's present, and it's just for me. And even for my cohort who actually was abused by a bishop and a priest, you know, she feels the same, and she gets triggered by seeing the shoes a priest wears. I mean, my heart goes out to her, and she's probably even the better person to maybe ask that question, and maybe you should have her on your show, actually. But there's just, you have to, it's the separation, you know. Jesus is not the one that did this to me. And just to come back to that, and let me say this statement. There was another girl, she's not Catholic, but she's one of my I Have a Voice. Her name is Tamara. But she cried out to God. She had such atrocities happen to her when she was little. And she found herself in a Christian church at the altar. Nobody else was in there. And she cried out to God, and she's like, how could you let this happen to me? And she felt him say to her, I was protecting your ability to love. I was protecting your ability to love. And when she told me that, or when she says that within that video, that is exactly what I know, and what I know for a fact. I mean, it's unfortunate that God allows us the one gift of free will, and that people abuse that and do horrible things, and that they're human and they do horrible things. But God has been with us and has protected us. And I can say, as I have said now, like, I am in a place that I absolutely know that I can be healed, and that if you feel like you'll never be able to love, or you'll never be able to enjoy sex, or you'll never be able to do whatever, because I used to say those things. I used to say, I'll just be a nun for the rest of my life. Like, I'll never be able to enjoy sex. Well, I do, and I have no problem saying that. Like, I do. I have a man that I love and trust and adore, and that I can say anything and know that he accepts me, and that we can discuss through it if it's hard. And anyway, so sorry, I know.
Well, what would you say to victims that have been so sexually and so traumatized by the priesthood, mm-hmm. and the leaders of the church covering it up and moving these priests, mm-hmm. and, you know, yelling, mm-hmm. bankruptcy so they don't help these people that need help so bad? Is there a disassociation with what you're talking about? In other words, what you're talking about is a personal level, and the organizational level, mm-hmm. you separate that. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Let me answer the first question you asked me. What I would say is, I am so sorry. And that's what brings me to tears. Because I have friends that are priests that I love and adore, and I know that they wouldn't do anything like that. And then I know priests that have now been convicted, and they need, rightfully so, right? And it has pissed me off, and it has brought forth that rage of what our Catholic Church has done, did not accept it. Sorry. And I would just say, I'm so sorry.
Don't apologize, Shannon. This is the root. This is what people need to hear, okay? You cry your eyes out, girl, because believe me, this pain runs deep, okay? This river and this ocean runs deep. And what you have told us has been beautiful. It has been spot on. It has hit the nail on the head, okay? And I'm so glad you told that, because, you know, people that are in the Catholic faith are, you know, they have a relationship with Christ. They have a relationship with the Holy Spirit. And the people above that would do that to people and allow it to happen is just heinous.
okay?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we know that we're in a cosmic battle. We know that there is a devil that hates us, and as Christians, and we won't go any further than that, but, you know, I feel your pain. Okay, let's go on.
Yeah.
And you have written three books, so I want you to talk about the three books, each one of them, and then I want you to leave us with the nugget, the audience with the nugget and a gem that you want them to hear. Okay.
Hey, and Tamala, it's Penelope. I do not mean to interject at all, and hopefully you can hear me, but I know we have only 8 minutes. We did have another caller, Patricia from Texas, and I think she's calling support of Shannon. I just wanted to point that out, that we did have another panel member join us.
Oh,
okay. Let me bring her on real quick.
Okay.
Patricia.
Hey, Shannon.
Hi.
Hey, Shannon, it's Patty. How are you?
Hey. Hi, Patty.
Hi, ladies. How are y'all?
We're all good.
Great, great.
Good.
You know, I got on as quick as I could. Sorry, I couldn't get on sooner. We were in another meeting and just kind of got off that one and tried to get on, and it seems like I got here on at the end. But Shannon has worked with me together as a survivor for a few years, and I got on and just kind of wanted to piggyback, or maybe you can go back to what you were talking about, how what Hopeful Hearts does is help families. I guess, you know, especially in my case, like how it's helped my marriage, you know, and maybe you can talk about how us as survivors just kind of, you know, the kind of the harsh realities that come when we don't cope with these things or when we don't work on these things early on, and kind of the help and the benefit that your program has been, you know, for somebody who's finally ready to just kind of talk about it and work on these things, you know?
Oh, thank you, Patty.
I'm going to let her get to that question, but I want her to talk about her books first. We're going to get to that question, Patricia. Okay. All right. So you've written three books, Exposed, Redeemed, Reclaimed. They're all self-help books, right?
Exposed
is the first part of your story. Okay, go ahead.
Right. Exposed and Redeemed are not – I say they're self-help books because I feel like if you read them, maybe it might be helpful. But Exposed is my very first book. Written, I don't know, now 12, 13 years ago. So keep that in mind that I, at the time when I wrote it, my full memory or even acknowledgement of the fact that I was raped by my grandfather was not in the picture. So if you do go to read this book, keep that in mind. But it's just my whole story, the story of the rape in high school and, you know, that kind of dealing, my mom, I do discuss my mom and my sister, but you just see that I don't acknowledge it for myself, but it's kind of my faith journey as well and dealing with abuse. But for me, when I was writing that, for me, as John even pointed out, it was just such a betrayal for a friend to rape me in high school and then to be raped again in college. But I also bring a great amount of spiritual warfare. Like I said, I'm a very spiritual person, and that's always been a big aspect. And, you know, Pamela, you made a comment about the enemy can get in, and that is so true. And so that is definitely something that's focused on within Exposed. And then Redeemed was me trying to point out the aspect of what abuse can do within a marriage. And I will... And I keep it up there, and I keep it. I will always sell it at any conference or talk that I'm at, because I even though it's a marriage that is now dissolved, and I do have my annulment from that marriage, it is very raw. I share journal entries. I share every aspect of what happened within that, and it does discuss that rage that I kind of went through, and it does discuss, you know, how that relationship. Kind of suffered it because of the abuse, and you know there's other aspects that happened. So Reclaimed came out. I had started writing Reclaimed a good right before Harvey hit, before I got the cancer, and then I ended up divorcing, and And then COVID hit, and I thought, well, I might as well go back and look at it and see. And I knew I always wanted to do a self-help book that was based off of what I use when I work with other survivors. And so that's what this is. It's truly the program that I went through myself that God gave me based off of Ephesians 5, 6 through 20. So it's 10 chapters. And it's what I feel like he gave me in the directive, but some of the stories of other survivors I've worked with. And anyway, so those are the three books so far.
Awesome. So before we get to your nugget down here, I can talk about a little bit of it. We had a question from Patricia, but before I go that route, when I asked you that question and you talked about it and you cried, I think that's a gap in a gap that needs to be filled for the people that, like yourself, that are staying in the faith, okay, that are so devastated because of the leadership and what's going, you know, what happened. And I think that needs to be addressed. I think those people need healing, very deep healing. You know, I say those people. I mean, you know, the people that are continuing in the faith, but that have been hurt so, so deeply by what happened. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. And so let me say this, and I'm just going to say what comes to me is, I've been through atrocities, but I personally cannot fathom that. I really can't. I mean, that's spiritual abuse in itself, because of somebody abusing that power, abusing what God was supposed to have given them, right, is to be Christ in persona, and that is sickening. It's absolutely sickening to think of somebody doing that, and especially to a child. I don't care how old you were, you know, it's just horrible. And I absolutely don't blame anybody for not ever wanting to come back to the Catholic faith and for not wanting to go to church at all. Like, I get that. And my ultimate thought, my ultimate belief, I choose to still celebrate my faith within the Mass, within the Catholic Church. But what I really believe, and this is how I do Hopeful Hearts, because Hopeful Hearts is a Catholic ministry. It's a faith-based ministry. But I have worked with people that are Muslim. I've worked with people that are agnostic, that are atheists. So, I mean, I just want to help people become not just survivors, but thrivers. Okay, so that's where I'm coming from in this statement. In regards to a faith-based Christian statement, I absolutely believe that it's about your relationship with God, your relationship in coming to an understanding, even a forgiveness. I had to come to a forgiveness of God. I'll never forget that moment, that time of therapy of I was mad at God. I hated God. And so I just want to give them this sense of it's okay. It's okay.
I don't want to cut you off. I'm so sorry, but we're down a minute. I don't know how the time got away. and I'm so sorry, Patricia. Miss Patricia, she did talk about Hopeful Hearts and talked about what you might have missed it, but she did talk about Hopeful Hearts. So we can go online and look at it all. And so leave the audience with something before we go, Shannon, just real quick, because I have to end the show.
Yes. You know what? If you're listening to this, I want you to know that you, whatever that lie is that has remained because of what you've been through, I want you to recognize the truth. Get rid of that lie. If that lie is that you're not good enough or that you're not worthy or you'll never be able to love again or you'll never be able to enjoy life or whatever that lie is that the enemy has put within you, it is a lie. It's not your truth. I want you to embrace the truth that you are worthy, that you are good enough, that you are beautiful inside and out, that you're worthy of a good life. And I just, I love you personally, and I haven't met you, but I know you.
All right. Thank you so much. And from NASCA, we're going to say goodbye to everybody. It's been a wonderful show. Thank you, Penelope, my co-host. Thank you, all the panelists. Thank you, Shannon. Good night.
Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.